This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to the Black Hawk Up podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please welcome your hosts, Jimmy Lynch, Patrick McGann, and Jeremiah Lee.
Welcome back to the Black Hawk Up podcast. I am Jimmy Lynch alongside Jeremiah Lee. Jeremiah, it's great to be with you.
Great to be back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, you too. And to all our viewers out there, whoever's listening, happy holidays to you too.
Happy holidays. Now, it's been a while. We've had a little bit of a pause here for the NHL because before the Christmas holiday break,
right,
there was a little bit of a COVID outbreak amongst the league. So now games will not happen until Tuesday, which is when you'll be seeing this. So it's weird. The Blackhawks haven't played in a while. It's been a longer stretch without games. I don't know about you, but it's been weird not being able to watch hockey.
I was looking forward to watching those Christmas games, watching more hockey and get an idea of what the Blackhawks will have to be dealing with or how they even look. Because it looked pretty dang good for a little while. But I feel like with this break, they're going to be a lot, they're going to be rusty and they're going to have even harder times finishing than they already have. So with the break, it's like, I think it's good for them to get rest, but I think it's also not a good thing because you need those guys to stay on the ice, staying, you know, like getting their play back. And they already started to heat up a bit, like against Toronto, even though they went down really, like they were down by like, what, 3-4 goals? They played their best game in coming back. And I feel like they showed more glimpses of that until they hit the roadblock. But I feel like with games like that, you need to get back there onto the ice so your tendency to second guess won't be that high, right? And because they have two games postponed or even canceled, because I mean, they're going to be canceling games for a long time now because this is what happened. Like, this is probably going to go on for a lot longer than just Tuesday, you know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like with these two games postponed and probably even more later on, I feel like this is going to hurt the Blackhawks even more because of their need for consistency and need for play to stay consistent and build upon their past games. So I feel like the break is going to not do many good things for the Blackhawks, but going to do good things for the teams who are injured.
Right. I think especially because the Blackhawks were kind of heating up a little bit, they still were losing some games, but they were obviously a little bit of closer games.
Right. That like the doesn't feel if the bounces great. Went their way, they would probably win like many of those games that they lost by like a goal or in overtime.
However,
you can say that about every team.
At the same time, it is nice to be kind of ending it on like a high note where the team was doing pretty well. So at least they can go into this little break, you know, feeling a little bit more confident and hopefully they can continue that momentum moving forward. I think it's really interesting though, because, you know, like when Jeremy Colleton was behind the bench, the team was awful. 1-9-2, could not get anything done. Now under Derek King with a little bit more time, they're like 10-6-2. That's an improvement.
Right.
So now, you know, Derek King gets a little bit of a break right around the holidays. I think he can take a little bit of time to reflect back, think about it.
Watch and film.
I feel like this team's that in that regard with the coaching staff and the system, that break really is a good thing before a grind of the next couple of months. They had a little bit of time to catch their breath.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because I feel like the coaching staff needs to sit down and watch film on their breakout plays, their power play and their penalty kill and their defensive zone plays, right? Because on the penalty kill, Seth Jones tried to block a shot, but it tipped into his own net. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, I feel like they need to review their systems on the special teams because they've been atrocious. So yeah, I feel like with this break, like they'll spend more time. I feel like spending Christmas with family is okay. But like when you're a coach of a team that's struggling, I feel like even though like your family's important, I still feel like you need to spend spend some time either on your own or with your fellow coaches in the office looking at film. Because you and I both know that they need a lot of work. I feel like they need to be more focused in the penalty kill, have that tight diamond formation more than their press the guy at the blue line. And then in their power play, they need to do more, they need to be more mobile. They need to move around more. And like they need Dominik Kubalík on the right face-off circle. That's what I think.
Well, the good news is You know, they had a little bit of time, hopefully, to do that. They returned to practice on Monday.
Yeah.
Pretty much the entire team was there, minus Marc-Andre Fleury, who was put in COVID protocol. It is amazing, though, that this team, I mean, knock on wood, but you're seeing a lot of teams with big outbreaks. But the Blackhawks, again, knock on wood, but they seem to be kind of avoiding that right now. So that's, you know, testimony to them. Great, great, good thing to see. We'll see how long that continues and where it goes from here. Hopefully this break helps all the teams around the league get their COVID numbers in check. And I really think the bringing back the taxi squad is going to help. It shouldn't be used in like, you know, like a money laundering ways with the salary cap, but we'll see what happens. Well, there'll be definitely be some interesting tales there, but you know, you got to look back. It's been a long 2021 year for hockey and the NHL and the Blackhawks and teams in general. You know, in this past year, we had the entire 2020-2021 season started in January, and now it goes all the way till now. So we've had a season and a quarter, a season and a half of hockey during this time. When you look back on this past year, what was like the biggest moment on the ice? I mean, I know there's, I think the biggest thing we all would say is the Kyle Beach situation and all the stuff there. And
But you know, on the ice, right?
On the ice. We're going to try and talk about the team and that kind of stuff. I mean,
let's try not to talk about off ice stuff, because I think we're all trying to recover from that. But I think for me, the thing that stood out the most is that Alex DeBrincat scored 49 goals in the course of the entire of 2020-2021.
That was big, yeah.
Yeah, because he outscored Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, he was fourth in the stretch.
He was behind. All I know is that he's behind Austin Matthews and then two other guys I forgot. And then I feel like Kevin Lankinen's shutout against the Florida Panthers, I believe, or the Tampa Bay Lightning in their home game. I forgot when it was, but he's got like a 45 save shutout or something. I feel like those two for me are like those two moments for me are tied for the most standout events for me. Personally.
Well, he was behind. DeBrincat was behind Matthews, Dreisaitl, and McDavid. So,
I mean, who can complain being behind those three? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can't complain being behind McDavid for anything, especially when you're in the top five.
In my mind, it has to be going back to the NHL draft in July, adding Seth Jones to this team. Just the feeling at the time of excitement about where the team was at and where we thought they were going to go this year. Contending,
right.
That was really cool to see.
Yeah,
and you added your elite number one defenseman for years to come.
That's true. That is true. But I still feel like those improvements from those young guys were very important for this team too.
Hey, you know what?
I agree with the Seth Jones trade, because I'm like, I will take full blame for saying that I didn't think that Seth Jones trade would work. I take entire blame.
You know
for
what?
That. He's been very consistent. I will give him that. He's been very consistent. He's been adding offense. He's been effective in the defensive zone, even though his defensive partners have been controversial, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like, yeah, that's true. Like adding Seth Jones was a huge move for the Blackhawks.
I understand what you're saying about those other things, like the adding the young players and all those things.
Yeah.
And you know what? I understand. Adding Seth Jones was great for the team,
yeah.
But what it cost them definitely was a high price.
That's true.
Two first-round draft picks and Adam Boakvist. You know, I think it'll be – I think in the long run, I think it'll even out, and I think Jones is worth it. But for right now, I definitely see looking at that and being like, that's too much to pay, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's what I thought when it first came up. I'm glad with his consistent play. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad that he's the guy who's dependable to play for like 27, 28 minutes a game. I'm glad that he's a guy who's a two-way defenseman who can add offense and apply defense in his own right. But at the same time, you don't have Adam Boakvist, who showed potential in his three-point outing with two goals and one assist against the Pittsburgh Penguins, I believe. Cole Sillinger, who's proving to be who's going to look to be like a really really effective top six guy for the Columbus Blue Jackets for the future. And the fact that we are probably, if we still continue to lose and pull the plug in this season, we're going to be losing like a top 10 draft pick. So it's like when you realize that we're losing like three key pieces that could potentially work towards rebuild, you know, it's kind of, you know, hindsight will be 2020 when this fully plays out, and we'll look back on this in like 7 years and be like, oh, they shouldn't have done this, or oh, this was a great trade. But like right now, like it's just 50-50 right now. We gave up so much, but we could get a lot more from Seth Jones than we think.
Now, you know, you talk about the past year and where the team's been at. It's crazy. Just think about this. It was last October of 2019. Excuse me, October of 2020. The Blackhawks announced that they were kind of going through this quote-unquote retool of the team.
Right.
They start the year off not supposed to do well, and the first couple games they were really bad playing Tampa and Florida during that season. They started to heat up a little bit. Those young players come in. Kevin Lankinen separates himself. All of a sudden, the team looks like a team that's just missing a few pieces. Right. You know, this offseason, they get those pieces. Yeah. They add Seth Jones. They add Jake McCabe. They go out and get Tyler Johnson for Brent Seabrook's contract, a contract we never thought was going to get traded.
And all of a sudden, Marc-Andre Fleury for nothing.
Yeah, and Marc-Andre Fleury for nothing. And all of a sudden, it looks like this team's ready. This retool, this rebuild is over.
Right.
And then the season starts. And it just totally changes perspectives. You know, 1-9-2, horrible start. Jeremy Colleton just can't get fired and eventually does get fired. Right. But no matter what happens, it was such a weird, bizarre year in that regard. Whereas, you know, it started off pretty low this past 2021 as a rebuilding team.
You're right.
To now where it almost seems like they're stuck and worse off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because I definitely get that.
It's amazing in that regard where this past year has been. But
yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like if the Blackhawks actually went through with their rebuild, right?
Yes.
And like they decided that business wise, it'd be the best move to send their guys who are over the age of 30 and about to, you know, expire in the contract or something, that they traded them for their return. But at the same time, I do feel like they look back in their season in 2020 when they couldn't make the playoffs, but they ran into a rut too many times, and they knew that they were that close to making the playoffs. So like you said, I do feel like they added the right pieces, but they did not do enough with what held them back the year before. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like Jeremy Colleton is not a good head coach. I think he'd be good assistant coach, but his system had so many, like his system was all about perfection. I think we can all agree on that, right? Mm-hmm. His system was so focused on perfection that the slightest mistake opened up a goal against you. And I feel like they couldn't realize that beforehand. And if they realize that, if they get rid of Colleton and brought in a good coach like Gerard Gallant or Bruce Boudreau or something like that, this team would be insane right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like this team has those pieces that you need to win, that you need to actually make the postseason, which they haven't done in like two seasons. And I feel like they still have the team on paper, right? We both agree that they have that team on paper that should make the playoffs, right? Everybody looked at this team on paper. They're like, this team's going to be scary. This team's going to like be insane. They only had to give up like Adam Boqvist and two first round picks for, you know, the haul that they brought in the offseason. And then the season starts and you're like, what is this? Like these guys have deteriorated.
Yeah. Exactly, 100%.
I feel like if they changed that coach in the beginning of the season, their veteran coach came in and had the entire training camp to get his guys established, right? Get the system established, get the guys like knowing what's going on, get them into the lines and chemistry and all that stuff, right? But they didn't. And I feel like that was their downfall this season. Their coaching was just not there.
Well, I feel like another downfall of the year has to be the fact that Toews and Kane aren't scoring. Your two biggest guys on your team, the two players that like the team's pushing for to win another championship during these next couple of years, those guys aren't there, you know?
Right. I feel like for Kane, I just feel like eventually, you know what I mean? Like he's going to get his chances and he's going to convert on those chances that he continues to get. Like, we see him get those high risk, like those high chance score, like those high scoring chances, you know what I mean? And he just can't finish. Like, we've been seeing this on like The Athletic, Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Tribune, like even ESPN. And they're saying that Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane are getting their chances. They're just not finishing. What is wrong with these guys? Why can't this team finish? And I feel like that is like you said, right now, not the beginning of the season, but right now, that's their main problem. They're getting their chances. They just can't convert on their chances.
I agree 100%. Kane's shooting percentage is at an all-time low right now.
Right.
Like 7.4% compared to like an average of 11. Right. So it's just down. His shots just aren't going in.
Right.
That definitely in 2022, this next part of the season, that needs to be a big thing that needs to change. You need Kane scoring. Right. You need Toews scoring more. Toews started to score a little bit before the pause, but yeah, those guys make the big money on the team. They need to be scoring.
Right.
You know?
And I also feel like, I'll just go ahead and say this right now. This system that Derek King is running is just not working. Like, mm-hmm. when you have guys who are this high-powered in offense, you're just not letting them go out and play to what they can do. You're playing with four checking lines. He came out and said that in an interview. Like, he's playing with four checking lines, and he's going for full defense. But when you can't score, and you play with defense, and you're playing all conservative, you can't expect these top guys to go out and score and do their thing, because they're not allowed to do their thing with the system that they're running. You know what I mean? Like, their neutral zone play is incredible right now. Like, they got so many turnovers a game. Like, they take away the puck and they're gone. But I feel like there's so many times that they just could have taken the puck to the net. You know what I mean? But like, they just bypass for the pass. It's not like Jeremy Colleton bad, where like it's 2-on-0 and they're trying to do a tic-tac-toe play with two guys and like they missed the net completely. But it's like, I feel like this team could do, or I feel like this Derek King could just deploy his guys to be like, all right, you guys are offensively minded guys. Go out there and get shots on goal, play with speed, go back and forth, and, you know, just go out there and, you know, do the thing that you were paid to do. Like, Alistair McKay was paid to go out there and score goals. He's not paid to go out there on the penalty kill and, you know, and hit people. They don't even hit people anymore. They're like 16 hits right now. So I'm like, honestly, just go out there, play your game. Have your lines go on the strategy that they need to go on. For example, the top six need to go on a cycle, but the bottom six need to go on a dump and chase, right? So it's like, until you start understanding that you need to keep these guys together who can play and complement each other's strengths, you're not going to get anywhere. Because
you mentioned DeBrincat on the penalty kill and stuff like that. Don't you think it's a benefit that he's so much more of a two-way player now than he was?
Right. But like, I'm not saying that like he shouldn't be on the penalty kill. Like, right. I think that Kirby Dach and Alex Brinkett on the penalty kill is amazing. Mm-hmm. You got young guys who are defensively minded enough, not just offensively focused, to have enough focus on their game to understand that the defensive side of the play is just as important, if not more, than the offense. But I feel like with this team, they're too defensively minded to where they're not going out there and actually converting on those plays. Because I feel like if you have a top six with guys who are just full skill, speed, pass the puck, cycle, shoot, and, you know, set up the play and everything, and then you have the third line as your defensive shutdown line, and they have your fourth line as the guys who just go out there and bash people to the boards for 7 minutes. I feel like that would be their key to success for the forward lines. But they're all playing the same way. You know what I mean? Like, they're not crashing the net for the fourth line. They're trying to cycle the puck. They can't cycle the puck, so they get the puck over. They go through the neutral zone, and then the defensive Marc-Andre Fleury has to, you know, play against a potential like 4-on-2, 3-on-2 rush or 2-on-1 rush. You know what I mean? It's like, you guys need to play to your strengths. And I'm sorry, but the fourth line isn't good enough to cycle. They're not good enough to cycle the puck in the zone. Mm-hmm. What they should do is pass the puck to the point and go to the front of the net, where all three of them go to the front of the net and the defense just shoots for deflection. But I feel like they're still trying to play too pretty for the bottom three, or for the bottom six.
How about the defense? Just the improvement there from last year.
I'm very happy with. I've been saying this forever. Get rid of Sheldon Brookbank. This defense will be so much better. Did I lie?
No.
Yeah. I've been saying this forever. Sheldon Brookbank is not cut out to be, you know, the coach of the Chicago Blackhawks in this vicinity. What he did was he did not do anything to help the defensemen with their spacing. Mm-hmm. Told them to pinch when they shouldn't have pinched. Told them to get in front of the shot when they just need to let the goaltender take the shot and get in front of the passing lane. And everything that the defensemen should do, they didn't do. And I'm like, this is not like on them, because I know I've watched these guys for a while. They're really good. But what they're being told to do isn't what you need to do to succeed. So I'm like, their defense is so much better at the firing of Sheldon Brookbank. I was right. I will always say I'm right because of this. And I've been saying this for like 2 years, and I'm so glad it happened. And I'm so glad this defense is playing like they should.
I just having a blue line with like such good pieces built around right. Seth Jones and Connor Murphy and guys like that.
Right.
It's amazing. They're bigger. They're better.
Right.
First Eric Gustafson actually is playing well.
Which, so surprising.
I saw that signing. Yeah.
We were talking about this like last month.
Well, yeah, we talked about it. It was such a signing where you're just going to wait for Caleb Jones and Riley Stillman to get healthy and then you dump them, get them out.
Right.
But you know what? You bring, again, that same coaching changes you're talking about. They seem to have actually got them on board a little bit more.
Right. Like
it's amazing.
There are some times where he's out of position. Mm-hmm. And there are some times that I feel like he could have done better with his assignment and his play in the zone. But overall, he's definitely exceeded my expectations. I feel he'd be like that guy who plays for like 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
if you need a seventh defenseman,
exactly.
You got one. That's all you need, really.
He is a very serviceable defenseman in the NHL. Yeah. I feel like when he was brought in, we're like, all right, he's just going to take up the spot and play like Curtis McDermott minutes, but just like 7 to 10 minutes a game and like give the other time to the other five guys here on the ice. But he's been extremely surprising for me. Like, I feel like he surpassed expectations.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you imagine this team like a year from now? Like, I'm trying to figure out this has been a very action packed year for the team. And it looks so much different now compared to last year. I almost wonder where they'll be a year from now. Obviously, we're not going to be talking about having won the Stanley Cup in 2021, but
no way.
This offseason, they have a lot of big moves to make. They have a lot of players to sign, a lot of changes. If you have like just one hot take about someone they keep or something they change, what do you think?
My hot take is that Jonathan Toews may not be here. I feel like the way he's been playing, I feel like he's still like a serviceable player in the NHL, but I feel like with where this team is heading, I feel like if they can keep Jonathan Toews on a affordable short-term deal, they should go for it. But if Jonathan Toews is asking for more than $7.5 million a year, they just got to let him walk. That's my hot take, but I'm pretty sure like many hardcore longtime Blackhawks fans, you want to see Toews finish his career here other than, you know, go to like Montreal or Toronto or something to finish his career.
Well,
but I feel like business-wise, it may not be smart to keep him for more than $7.5 million.
Well, he signed through the end of next season. So he is going to be with the team at the end of this coming, like at the end of 2022.
For next year, I feel like the question will be, how much do you pay him and how much is too much?
Right.
So I feel like next year is more about like, what are you going to do with your top two guys who were seen as your like cornerstone pieces? But I feel like they will be in a better spot next year overall. Like my hot take was Jonathan Toews will not be here after his contract's over for more than $7.5 million. But for next year, I feel like they'll be more set in stone, I think, to contend for the postseason, if not go for a Stanley Cup.
I don't see them. I don't think if Taze isn't re-signing with the team, and I don't even think 7.5 is too much. The number's more towards like 4 or 5. You know, he's not.
Oh my!
The argument, he might not even be worth that right now. He hasn't been scoring goals or doing a lot of that to make him worth a first or second line money. You know what I mean?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just like his superstar status right now. It's like sometimes it's just embarrassing to sign for less than that.
If he isn't re-signing with the team, I could definitely think he could just, you know, he can maybe retire, you know, I don't really think he plays elsewhere. If he's done, mm-hmm. I would say he's done, period. You know what I mean?
I think so.
But
I don't know. It's just weird.
Speculating, just talking, right. But I think Patrick Kane is an interesting player where there's definitely still a lot of trade value. And I feel like it makes sense for him to want to play elsewhere and maybe try and go win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
But for
people were saying New York.
I still believe New York makes sense, but you never know.
if they're going to trade him at all, I feel like New York is the place because they have the pieces to get a valuable return.
My hot take about the team, though, would it be? I almost don't believe it, but I'll say this: Derek King is still head coach.
I mean, I wrote an article about this.
Yeah,
I feel like Derek King, give him enough time, and I feel like he'll be a good coach in the NHL. I mean, he may not be the head coach per se, but I feel like he'll be good to be on that team as an assistant at the very least.
The way Derek King and Mark Crawford's just coaching relationship right now, having an NHL coach and then an associate coach.
Right. That's what, yeah. I feel like that's a good assistant for this team right now.
Yeah. I think that works, and I could see them, whoever they bring in as the president of hockey ops and who they use as a GM. Why wouldn't, if you're just going to kind of like treading water and kind of doing what they're doing right now, just keep that system in place.
Right.
It's not the Bears where everyone's calling for Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace to be fired.
Oh boy.
We already let go of Jeremy Collison. It's just a matter of,
yeah.
You're probably not going to be competitive. So keep this guy in place and see where the talent pool is in another year. Now, if there's like a coach out there that they think is the future and the answer to this team, bring in that guy. But around the NHL, usually you have a coach for when the team's not good. And then you have your coach that you're bringing in where you're going to try and compete.
Right.
I don't think they're entering that competing stage this offseason.
I think they need to keep that teaching coach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or their young guys. I mean, this is stupid to say, but for NHL 21, even like for the be a GM mode, like, you like just with that, like it's the same thing as in real life, right? You have a coach that is their specialty is teaching, like they're teaching the guys how to be an NHL player. Like Dennis Savard, he came in and showed Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith and those in the core for the past, like in their 8-9 years of dominance, how to be a serviceable superstar in the NHL. And he did that amazingly. And these guys came in and like blossom to become like one of the most dominant teams of like in a decade. Like they dominated the NHL for a decade. They cruised through the regular season right to the playoffs, like every single year from like 2010 or so to 2000 or 2009 to the 2017 or something like that. And it's like you said, like you need that after you get to that point where you're done with your rebuild, like the Blackhawks were, right? And you have the guys who you're like, okay, this is our core. We can see that they're going to be, that they're a good group of players that we can build around. And then you bring in the Joel Quenneville or John Cooper to send the guys out and say, like, we're going for the cup. I feel like you said, I feel like they need that they need to stay with that teaching coach right now before they go out there and get that big money, like dependable veteran coach who can take them places.
It'll be really interesting to see where they're at. I think, you know, like another player to talk about with that is, where's Dylan Strome a year from now? But also another player that probably isn't getting the same kind of conversation with about like their future with the team, Dominik Kubalík, whether or not they re-sign him or he walks in free agency. It's going to be a pretty interesting offseason. Kubalík's still going to be an RFA. He has RFA status. So,
right. So I feel like they're going to qualify him. I feel like if Strome and Kubalík are still here, wait, is Strome an RFA?
They'll both be RFA status this offseason.
I feel like I feel like they will at least qualify both.
You think they'll qualify? Yeah.
Because I feel like you get enough of a, you know, a return, or what is it, the consolation or something? Like you still get a draft pick. I'm pretty sure if they sign elsewhere.
Yeah.
Was it like a fourth round pick, third round pick, something like that? I don't know.
It depends on how much they're trading. You know, like
right.
Who's signing him before. So
how much they're getting back, or how much they're signing for elsewhere, and the team gives the other team the draft pick, or how much they're signing them for. It's not going to be a first round pick because neither of those guys are worth like over $8 million or anything like that. But
I just hope that, like with Kirby Dach too, because he'll also be an RFA this offseason. I don't want to see another situation like the Carolina Montreal thing this past offseason, where they use the offer sheet system to steal a player. So the Blackhawks have a lot of interesting players and a GM who's new to the game and Kyle Davidson.
Right. But Kyle Davidson did do their contracts for a little while.
True.
He did sign the Kubalik deal and the Dubrincik deal. So mm-hmm. I still feel like he's going to be able to do something.
Yeah. So.
And I'm pretty sure he did Brandon Hagel too, because he was the guy who did all the contracts from what I recall for his introductory article or interviews.
Well, that so I feel Hagel like he'll be able to work something. Is pretty good too.
That Hagel contract is a bargain, and I've been saying this on Twitter. I've been saying this on Black Hawk Up. I've been writing about this all the time. That is the best contract in the NHL.
Hagel for 1.5 for 3 years.
Yes, you have. I mean, like, sure, Nathan MacKinnon is, you know, 6.4 million and all that stuff. But I mean, like, for the bargain that you're getting. At least for this team, it is the best contract for this team. At the very least, it's the best contract in a long time for the Blackhawks. You have a guy who's a top six winger, who everybody around the league says, if you want to talk about work ethic and a guy to follow after, it's Brandon Hagel, right?
Right.
He scores goals in many different ways. He can shoot it and score. He can tip it and score. He can wrap around and score. He could fight for the puck and score. He can win puck battles against like three guys at once. I mean, this guy's insane. He's like a Swiss Army knife. And the fact you get him for 2 more years and $1.5 million, that's insane.
Well, all of last offseason was about the defense and goaltending, adding Fleury and adding McCabe and re-signing Murphy and stuff like that. This coming offseason is going to be all about forwards, because as awesome as Hagel is, him and Tyler Johnson are the longest signed players on the team.
That's true.
For the forward group.
Yeah.
And Mackenzie Entwistle, but he's not even making $1 million. So he's out of the conversation.
Right.
It's Johnson and Hagel. That's it. So it's going to be a very interesting time this offseason, because once free agency hits, that's the first period where they could potentially re-sign Alex DeBrincat right then and there.
Right.
Or Taze or Kane.
Right. I don't know. I feel like they've come too far to turn back, personally.
Yeah.
I feel like after they went out and brought Seth Jones in for that big money deal, if you're going to be a rebuilder, you don't bring in a serviceable big money deal for no reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when they brought him in, it was like telling the fan base, like, well, when they brought in Seth Jones, Jake McCabe, Marc-Andre Fleury, Tyler Johnson, they re-signed Connor Murphy, and they're like, hey, we're going for it. Like, we're going to try to be competitive again. And they're not competitive right now, but I feel like next year they're going to have to be, or they have to clean house. Like, I feel like if they're not competitive next year, they may have to actually clean house and focus on the rebuild.
It's kind of hard to clean house when you have Taze and Kane both have no movement clauses. Seth Jones has a modified. Jake McCabe has a modified.
Right. It's like,
and Fleury also has modified right now.
If you can,
it's kind of hard to clean house with those.
It's hard to clean house, right? But I feel like if they're not competitive next year, I don't know what you do. Because you have a lot of guys who are, well, first off, your first round pick is gone, right? You can't trade any more first round picks. So, and especially when you're not even that competitive right now, it's like, I don't think with all these serviceable guys on your team, I feel like it's not the best business move, in my opinion, to keep them all, right? It's like for Calvin DeHaan, I feel like he's going to be traded at the deadline if they're not anywhere close to the playoffs. And I feel like it's going to be the same thing next year. If they're nowhere closer to the playoffs, the guys who they can move for a nice return, they're going to move. Because I feel like with Sam Bowman, he was too stubborn to go to a rebuild and focus on the rebuild. Because he was so used to playing in the playoffs and watching his team dominate that he couldn't stand watching them be that bad and have to tank. But I feel like with Kyle Davidson, I feel like he knows enough about this. Well, I feel like he's not stubborn enough to go against the president of hockey operations. So I feel like if he knows anything about hockey, that if the team is bad next year as well, they got to do something to get returns and get young and get now, those and get top draft picks.
You know, it's that's just me. It's been a lot of fun talking. It stinks that we don't have games to talk about. So we'll be really excited once the games get going again to talk. But
right.
I want to ask you one trivia question before we get going.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Are you ready?
I suck at trivia, man.
You'll be fine. I believe in you.
Oh, boy.
Out of the players on the active roster right now in the lineup and just in the NHL in general on the roster, okay, how many of those players were drafted by the team?
Ooh. For the Blackhawks?
For the Blackhawks. How many of the players on the Blackhawks have been drafted by the team?
Oh, my. Okay, Brandon Hagel is not. Because Entwistle was, I think, a trade. Dominic Kubalik was also a trade. Alexander Bickett was drafted. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, three of those are drafted.
The three highest moneymakers on the offense. Yes, you got it right.
Yes.
Toews, Kane, DeBrincat.
On the back end, right now on the active roster, I don't think any.
There's none on the active roster, correct?
Kevin Lankinen was a free agent acquisition, and Marc-Andre Fleury was drafted by the Pittsburgh Penguins, so none from the goaltender side either.
You're missing two. Yep.
They're all on the offense, aren't they? Okay, let me go through the liner real quick. Okay, top six.
You're going to say a name.
Kirby Doc. Like,
oh, yeah, there it is. Kirby Doc.
Kirby Doc. So there's one more, right?
Yep.
I already said Alex DeBrincat.
I was going to give you this name, but honestly, you actually should know it.
I probably should. I'm still going through the list. Wait, are you counting like active roster or?
I'm going off of the cap friendly active roster page.
Right now.
So you could pull it up.
Reese Johnson was drafted.
Reese Johnson is. He was signed. No.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. I thought he was like a late round draft pick. Honestly, I'm probably going to freak out after this, but I still can't put my finger on the right on the last guy.
Philip Kurashev.
I knew I would have missed somebody obvious.
Fourth round pick. Pretty good pick for the fourth round there.
Yeah, I think I even wrote an article about him being a steal. Can't believe I missed that guy.
There you go. Jeremiah misses trivia on the day.
Whenever you do a trivia like this, like you should know the guy, but the pressure of the situation kills you. It's like the final exam. You know everything, but like if you get there, you're like, oh crap, messed up.
Well, I guess I won't ask you how your finals went then. So
actually, I finished with the overall GPA of 3.5 for my overall my finals.
Congratulations.
So I don't think that's the best analogy. But like when you take a test, like sometimes you brain fart with the questions you should know, and then somehow get the questions you shouldn't have gotten right. So,
well, everyone, thank you for a great 2021. 2022 is only going to get better. Hopefully, you enjoyed listening. Go Blackhawks and have a great night.